Okay, so sounds like the spaghetti tower bill went pretty well. Reminder, you have a report due on that, due on Friday, 5 p.m. There's a handout posted on the website, has been for quite a while, that has a lot more information about what should be in that report, suggested outline, all those kind of things. Make sure that you get it named correctly and sent to me with a proper email subject and follow the submission instructions. All your teammates should be copied on the submission email. I need one email from each team with all your teammates copied on that email. Make sure that by then you have looked at those technical writing lectures that I posted, those videos you're supposed to look at last week. We will be looking for those things when we grade these reports. We'll go over some of that stuff again in class, but we are looking for those things, and we are holding you accountable for having watched those lectures and understanding that material. So if you have questions between now and Friday on stuff that's in those lectures, make sure you ask us. Okay? Is that clear? Yes? Okay. The other thing, as we talked in the first day of class, we will be taking attendance in here regularly. We'll start that a week from today based on seating. So if you have a seating preference, if you want to be in the front, for example, or you want to be in the back, or you want to be right or left, or whatever it happens to be, you need to email me this week by Friday so that I can make sure that gets accounted for in the seating chart that we'll implement a week from today. Once we get that seating chart implemented, a week from today, you need to be in your seat, your assigned seat. By the time that clock says, should be 3:30, but whatever 30 it's showing, given the daylight savings time, et cetera, all right, from the beginning of class. Okay, if you're not in your assigned seat, you're going to be marked absent. If you're walking the door, you're going to be late. All right, everybody got that? Yes?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. So that was the two pieces of business. Today we're going to spend the bulk of our time talking about problem understanding, which is probably the core area of this course, I think could be said. Everything kind of spins out from that. And I think it's the step of design that certainly inexperienced designers miss, and probably a lot of experienced designers miss as well. Right? But is critically important to designing products, designing mechanisms that are actually useful for people and actually solving the problem that they're intended to solve. Let's review again. I think we talked through this again that first week of class, the phases of the design process. Basically, today we'll be talking about the first phase, the problem understanding phase. Right? On Thursday, we'll talk through steps one and two. They're kind of coupled. Problem understanding, specifications, development. Today. On Thursday, we'll get into conceptual design, right? And that's effectively where this design process we'll talk through in this class kind of ends. Okay? We're getting up to the conceptual design phase, building a prototype, testing a prototype effectively. There's a much different process that comes into play when you start talking about detailed design. So the designs we're going to do in this class, we're not going to go through the analysis of how to pick out the optimal gear train, for example. Or how do you pick the optimal material size? Right? That's, you'll get that much later in your career, much later in the curriculum here. We're talking about conceptual design gets you to what's the core idea? How should this work? Right? The detailed design and production specification come later in the curriculum. Right? Once we have production specs, we need to manufacture the thing, and then increasingly, you'll see that companies are responsible for the disposal or recycling of products that they manufacture. Right. I think it's fairly widely implemented in the EU, for example, right now. You manufacture a product, you have to have some way to take it back if someone wants to give it to you as waste. Right. So basically, that becomes part of our design and product life cycle, building some way into our process of taking that material back. So basically, you know, 4 and 5, you'll get largely in, you know, machine design or manufacturing class. Some of that stuff might show up in a controls or vibrations class, right? So as I said, we'll basically talk about those first three steps. Okay. Problem understanding, specification development, and conceptual design, right? And I've said this is the most nonlinear part, right? This is the part where you know, start out at least, knowing the least about what your solution is going to be. Right, you get down to detailed design. I know what the answer is. Now I'm just trying to optimize the implementation of that answer in terms of material cost and all these kind of different things, right? This first phase, 1, 2, 3, we start out during this journey, this part of the design process, we don't know what the answer is yet, or if there is an answer, right? So we end up having to kind of loop through here and repeating things and trying to learn more about our problem so that we can get to what we think is an answer that answers our customer needs. I've labeled these out, steps kind of 1 through 7, but this entire process is iterative. And that's another point we're going to stress throughout the rest of the semester, right? You don't finish problem understanding and then forget about it and move on to the next step, and your problem understanding is in fixed in stone forever, right? You always need to be revisiting what your understanding of the problem is, right? We're going to do some problem understanding. You're going to get your final project, right? And actually, less than a month away, you'll get your final project assignment. Right? You'll have some problem understanding of that on day one, but that will be much different than your problem understanding, what you're able to understand the problem 3 weeks in or 4 weeks in. So that part of the design process needs to evolve. You need to iterate on your understanding consistently based on what new information you're gathering during your process. Okay? And we kind of flashed this up the first day, but effectively we're trying to move you guys, continue to move ourselves from being junior or inexperienced designers down to here, where we really are concentrating on understanding our problem, right? If we can clearly understand the problem we're solving, we can spend much, much less resources on the actual design and build. And for your company, that's where your company gets really happy with you and you get promotions. And you just end up with better products in general, actually, as well. Okay. So let's start about talking about this first step, our problem understanding. Excuse me. So the first step of this process, for anything you're designing, to ask yourself, who is the customer? Right? And we're going to use a fairly broad definition of customer here. Not just who's buying your product, although that can be one of your customers. We're going to define customers anyone who has a vested interest in how your product looks or performs or costs or whatever your product is. Okay. Whoever, someone who cares about what your product is, they're one of your customers. Right? So you might have, and the kind of most obvious one is whoever's going to use the thing at the end. Right? You're developing something to be sold, you know, sold to millions of people, hopefully, off the shelves of Target or Best Buy or whatever, right? They're obviously a customer. They're going to actually buy the thing from the store, right? So that's the first obvious customer. So if we're defining customer as someone who has some interest in what your product looks like or performs or does, who might be some other customers? Anybody? Yes. So whoever's selling your product. So if you're designing some product to be sold on the shelves of Target or Best Buy, Target and Best Buy are also your customers. They have some interest in what that product looks like and does and is. They need it to sell, right? So they can make some money. All right. Who else? Yeah.
Your boss,
your CEO, the vice president of whatever division you're in, certainly. The government, so you'll see some product, particularly if you're designing some kind of food product that might interact with, you know, FDA might care about it. You're designing some kind of electronics, the FCC might care. You're designing something that interacts, like a workplace product, OSHA probably cares, in terms of workplace safety. So the government has some interest, certainly. Who else? Yeah. The manufacturer, certainly. So I think I have that one. So thing has to get made, so the manufacturer has some interest. We need to be able to make this thing cheaply and make some money while we're manufacturing it. Your internal sales team, kind of related to your kind of company CEO, president, whatever, right? The internal parts of your company probably have some interest in this product. Okay? So this is the first question we actually need to ask ourselves when we're faced with the design problem. Is not really who is our customer, but who are the customers? Plural. It's going to be rare when you have just one. Okay? And I think you need to make this an explicit part of your process. It makes sure your team agrees on the definition of who your customers are. Right? If you haven't come to this agreement early on in the process, one of you may be designing for an end user, one of you may be designing for the reseller. And your team's not going to be able to work well together if you haven't explicitly defined this. Okay? So given we can have some kind of long list of customers, are they all going to agree on what they want from your product? No. Right? They're going to have disagreements. Your end user wants to pay $0 for whatever you're making. Right? Your sales team, your CEO, Target or Best Buy or wherever, they probably don't want to charge $0 for your product. Okay? How well do you think your customers are going to be at telling you what they really want? They will tell you what they want. How good are they at matching what they tell you they want to what they actually want? We're actually pretty bad at that, it turns out. There's actually a lot of studies showing this. Right? Your customers, these people, are not going to do a really good job of telling you what they want out of your product. There's a famous Henry Ford quote. Right? If I listened to my customers, I would have just built a faster horse. Right? So as customers, we're telling them, we want to go faster. But what you can do is distill out of that, I want to get from point A to point B faster. Right? So I can design, opens up more innovation in my product design. Okay. So this is the fundamental first step of engineering design. Right, in this conceptual design phase. Right. Figuring out who your customers are and figuring out what they want. Okay. And they're going to have conflicting demands. And it's going to be up to us and using our engineering skill and our design skill to figure out how to navigate the conflicting demands. Well, first figuring out what they really want, right, and then how to navigate those conflicting demands. Okay. One tool we're going to use to do this. Kind of methods called quality function deployment is largely based on this tool called the House of Quality. This will be one of our primary design tools we use in this class. First published in 1988 in the Harvard Business Review, a couple of professors. Academic paper here. But they actually studied the Kobe shipyards in Japan. So at that time, this was one of the best shipyards in the world. Right? And you looked at, they were effectively more efficient. They had higher customer satisfaction than any other shipyards in the world at the time. So the professors went there to try to understand how the shipyard was so much better than everywhere else at the time. Right? It's changed a little bit since then. Right? And out of that, they kind of took the ideas that shipyard was using to address their customers' needs and tried to generalize it to a process that we could use for design. And this House of Quality and quality function deployment is a result. So quality function deployment is actually a planning tool. So it's not like quality assurance, not checking the product after it's manufactured. Right? It's quality function deployment. We're trying to design properties into our product. Okay. And basically it's trying to map your customer needs, your customer requirements, into product development or engineering specs. What that's going to do is allow you to establish when and where and what time you need to spend on each part of the process. Right? To focus on the properties of your product that matter the most to your customer. Kind of makes some intuitive sense. We can figure out what our customer really cares about. That's where we should focus our effort, both in time and money. Right? Equally important, it helps you understand where you shouldn't be spending time and effort. It's really easy, particularly for a large product. It's called product or functionality creep. Right? You start designing a product, and we could add this in, we could add that little bit, we could add this piece. And effectively, your product requirements kind of grow and grow and grow forever. Right? Well, if you haven't understood your customer, then that's really easy to happen. Because you don't know what they want, so you're inclined to just throw extra stuff in. Right? But if you understand your customer, you can understand, well, all this extra stuff my customer doesn't care about. So we shouldn't be spending time on these features, this feature creep that nobody cares about. Okay? And like I said, it's not quality control. What we're trying to do is go from this process. So this is kind of illustrative, kind of like the sticky note, if you will, in graph form. Okay? So on the horizontal axis, we have time. We have kind of two landmarks, start the design process, and a time somewhere out in the future we're going to start production. And I'm going to say that this blue line we have right now is kind of a bad design process. Right? We start out on day one making design choices and design changes to whatever product we're working on. Those ramp up over time until we get close to production, and then we have another surge of changes after production begins. That could be we didn't fully understand the manufacturing process or our manufacturer's as a customer's requirements. It could be we start production and start selling the thing, and we didn't understand our customer requirements, so we have to do some redesign once we've started manufacturing. It's quite common for companies to have to do that. So, where are the expensive changes on this chart? Yeah, the farther we get that way, the more expensive the changes get, right? If we're making a bunch of changes after we started production, we're in trouble. Those are really expensive changes to make. Okay. Some kind of representative good design process. We're making very few design decisions, and probably this should be down at zero on day one. Very few design decisions at the beginning of the project. They ramp up over time and then ramp down to zero before production begins. So we're spending most of our time and effort making these design changes and understanding the problem here so that we can make the design changes when they're cheap to make. Not over there when they're expensive. Okay, so let's discuss the house of quality. House of quality looks something like this, and it's called the house of quality because it has that kind of pointy roof like a little kid might draw on a house. There's all these different parts. We're going to talk primarily about the middle part. What we're going to say, and my battery's going to die. I might have to let you guys excuse me for a minute. Excuse me. A lot of the utility in this tool is actually in completing it, right? So we're going to get some numbers out the back end of it, right? We're going to be able to calculate some data from this, but we're going to continue, and you'll see kind of as we start filling it out, a lot of the utility, a lot of the usefulness isn't actually thinking clearly about what data you're putting into it, right? Like we said, this process is iterative, so this document, this house of quality, we say is a living document. It's getting updated as you continue to understand more and more about the problem and more about your customer. Okay. Let's look at the middle part of the house of quality. It's called the problem understanding form. Okay, and it has these components. In the left-hand column is your understanding of what the customer wants. And this customer that goes here is kind of your aggregate customer. So you have a product that has this N number of customers, the end user, the manufacturer, the reseller, your sales team, your CEO, all care about different things. What goes here is you've taken all that input and distilled it down into a customer. It's kind of a mashup of everyone that cares about your product. Okay. That's what gets listed here. Okay. Across the top part of this chart are the engineering characteristics. These are measurable characteristics of the design or measurable characteristics of a design, probably more generally. Right? Engineering characteristics, the way I want you to think about these is if someone was solving the same problem as you or had solved or proposing a solution to the same problem you're working on, and they brought that solution and set it down on the desk in front of you, what could you measure about that design to know whether or not it's meeting the customer requirements? That make a little sense? Right. So I have this long list, and we'll work really hard to get this list to be an accurate portrayal of my aggregate customer. Engineering characteristics are things you could measure about some design, some proposed alternative, some proposed solution to understand whether it meets the customer requirements or not. Okay, so let's use an example. Your final project, kind of give you a preview. You're going to have some customer requirement, and it's actually a rigid customer requirement in this sense, on the size of it, the volume. Right? It's going to be less than 18 inches high and a 12 by 24 inch footprint. Right? That is going to be one of your customer requirements. Right? And that probably actually is three customer requirements, height, width, and length. I set a solution to you. And hey, this is a proposed solution to the final project from Mackey 201. What are measurable characteristics of your design, things you can measure about it to know whether you're meeting those three customer requirements? Anybody? Well, I could use a ruler to measure what?
The volume.
I could measure, device total maximum width, device maximum length, maximum height. So I've defined three measurable things to understand whether I'm meeting the customer requirements on volume. Okay? Pretty straightforward example. Okay? What goes in the middle, and where this becomes really useful, is that those three things you can measure, the length, the width, and the height, also will impact your ability to meet other customer requirements. If you've seen some pictures about the contest before, showed a video on the first day, right? Those measurements are going to have some effect on how easily you might be able to make it out to the center and do stuff out in the center of the track. Right? So if you have some customer requirement down here, those measurements give you some information about whether you meet that customer requirement or not. So that's what's going to go in the middle part here. How do these things I can measure about my design relate to my customer requirements? Okay. And you can start out, and probably the initial way to get to that is to take a requirement. Okay, now what can I measure about my design? And it may be more than one thing that I need to measure to see whether I'm meeting this customer requirement or not. And I go down the list like that. And what you'll end up with initially is kind of a diagonal of stuff. And then we need to go in and fill in the extra relationships. Okay, so let's look at how we could do that. I take some customer requirement, right? And I take some engineering characteristic. And I look at, well, how strongly are these two things correlated? Right? So for our example, if I had a customer requirement that the height is less than 18 inches, and this engineering characteristic is measure the height or maximum height, then those two things are strongly related. So I put in a symbol for strong. And I march through the table, filling out the rest of those requirements. Okay. We'll see, and we want to weight these as 1, 3, 9, because that's going to force us to make a choice. Right? Kind of even scales, 0 to 4, 1 to 4. Right? Everything is going to want to be a 2 or 3. Right? 1, 3, 9. There's a significant difference between the medium and strong. Right? So it's going to force us to make that choice. So we just march through the entire table that way, looking at every customer requirement versus every engineering characteristic, and filling out what's the relationship between them. And we can get some chart. This, just to warn you, and the examples in the book, is way, way, way too small for a house of quality. This is what we chose and what's in the book to fit on a slide or in the book. Okay. These things, and then we'll see later today, will get very large. Right, this should include everything your customer cares about for a product. Okay. In the house of quality, in the problem understanding form we're looking at so far, we want to look for a few things. We're going to look for blank rows. So here's an example, kind of same one. We just removed a row. What does a blank row tell you? Telling you about what you have so far. So that's one way to think about it. I can't measure anything about this product that tells me whether I'm meeting that customer requirement or not. Or equivalently, kind of as an extension, I'm doing nothing as an engineer right now to address this customer requirement. Okay? Is that good or bad? That's bad, right? So if you find an empty row in your house of quality, you need to figure out what's going on. The customer cares about something, and we're not doing anything to address it. Okay? So customer needs not being addressed. Look at blank columns. What does a blank column tell you? Anybody? Yeah, so I'm measuring something or doing something as an engineer that my customer doesn't care about. Is that a problem? Yeah, probably. Right? So empty columns are a problem. Effectively, we're wasting time. We're trying to address a customer need, trying to measure how successfully we're addressing a customer need that our customer actually doesn't even care about. It's a waste of time and resources. That's usually a bad thing. Okay? Common question here is, well, you just told me the customer's not going to tell me what they want, so how do I know that that's not the problem? Well, remember that the customer here is your aggregate customer. You've taken in your understanding of the customer and distilled out what you think they care about. So this is not a direct translation of what they want. This is your understanding of it. So you better be addressing everything. Okay. Of course, we can get some numbers. We can look at technical importance. And kind of I want to stress again before we figure out how to calculate these, we're not using the numbers as the only justification for the decision. Right? The work and the real utility of this device is thinking clearly about what your customer wants, what are your engineering characteristics, and what are the relationship between those things. The numbers we get out are just a way to summarize all the work we put in figuring out those things, right? And a way to communicate that information to someone else. Okay. We can look at it absolute importance. Basically, it's kind of a weighted sum of that column. Right? And then the relative importance is the sum of those absolute importances. So we can get kind of a percentage weighting. Right? So in this case, hopefully, so I can take my requirements. One thing we haven't talked about yet, sorry about that, is each one of these customer requirements is also weighted by how important you think it is to your customer. So your customer doesn't care about all things, all their requirements equally. It's also up for you and your team to distill out what are the most important of these requirements. All right, what's the ranking of them? Okay. That's usually a 0 to 10 or 1 to 10. If it's 0, it shouldn't be there. Okay. So we rank out how important those customer requirements are. Then we take a weighted sum across them. So we have 5 times 9, 9 times 9, 2 times 3, and we should get 132. And that's our absolute importance. We do that for each of the columns. We can get a sum of all those and figure out kind of the relative importance of each of those tools, each of these engineering characteristics. So this can kind of help us understand we should be spending, that's my battery, we should be spending some time there. Okay? It's actually a good place to stop. I'm planning to stop anyway. What I want you guys to do in the next few minutes while I go get my charger is to, with your neighbors, you don't have to worry about getting your teams, take your spaghetti design project. I want you to identify who are the customers for the spaghetti tower and what were their customer requirements. Okay? And then what are the engineering characteristics related to those customer requirements for a spaghetti tower? You guys got that? So your spaghetti tower you built last week, designed before that, right? Who were the customers? Remember, customers, anybody who cared about that tower. What were their requirements? And what could you have measured? What were the engineering characteristics for that problem, for that design? Okay, so let's spend the next 10 minutes working on that. Okay, it seems like everyone's either got it figured out or decided they don't want to. So we'll continue. So let's discuss a little bit. Let's change this over. For our spaghetti tower design, who are the customers? Okay. I'm going to say instructors, Ms. Hodge and I, and me. Who else?
The build team.
The
designers are also a customer.
Designers. Why are they a customer?
We care about our grades.
You care about the grades, hopefully how well your design works, but yeah, as an extension, maybe the grade. Any other customers for this one? University, maybe? Sure. University, the department probably has some stake in what your design looks like. We can use it to measure how effective our teaching is or something. Maybe. Okay, sure. All right. Anybody else? How so? So not just a normal artist, a cake artist. Okay. Artisans. Sure, maybe you could inspire some artists to make a spaghetti tower cake. Seems fine. Anybody else? I think that's a pretty good set. Okay. So we can look at our design process, and this is the exact process you want to go through with your team. So sit down, do kind of a stereotypical brainstorming. Who cares about our design? Who are the customers? Okay. So you're going to get to some list that's probably longer than that you actually can focus on. And that's going to be a part of the design process as well. You're going to have to make some compromises. You're going to have to figure out, of all these customers, who's most important. And then what do they care about? And then how do we fill in the kind of less important customers' requirements to supplement those of the most important customers? Right. Or is it better to go after customers 2 through 5 and address that market compared to just the number one person in the market? That's something your company kind of strategic decisions you get to make as a designer as well. Okay. So I'm going to choose instructors, build team, design team. Okay. So I'm going to choose those 3 customers that I'm going to prioritize their needs above everything else. Okay. So then you want to take your kind of chosen set of customers and think about, well, what do each one of these customers care about? So for the spaghetti tower design, what do your instructors care about? What are customer requirements of the instructors, if they're one of your customers?
What type of materials used?
Materials. Okay. So built we built and measured within 45 minutes. Support tennis ball. I think you can refine that farther. Support a tennis ball where? As high as possible. Clear instructions? Yeah, we probably care about that. I think your build team might care about that more. But certainly, yeah, we probably have some interest in that too. What else do you imagine your instructor as a customer cares about in this design? Yeah.
That it's possible to be built by 3 or 4 people?
Sure. So that's kind of an implied rule of that contest, which you could expect 3 or 4 people per team. So you couldn't come up with a design that took 10 people to make. Right. What else? You think?
Professionalism,
sure. We're always expecting that of you guys. I'm sure there's more, but we seem to be slowing down a bit. Let's think about the build team. What do they care about? Clear instructions. That's probably their main requirement, that you give me clear instructions. What else? So that's height's kind of a repeat of the instructor. We wanted you to support it as high as possible. The build team probably wants that too. Easy to build. Pictures where? Okay. Low maintenance, maybe. Never can remember how to spell this. Sure, they have the actually have to build it in less than 45 minutes because you need time to get a measurement too. Right? What's that? So yeah, let me call that a robust design. So we'll talk about design robustness. Means it's not sensitive to little errors or deviations. What else? I'm sure there's more. Let's move on to you guys. Or build team, or design team. What does the design team care about? Yeah, you want, I think everybody kind of agreed on that one. So that kind of is cluing you in. That might be an important customer requirement. I might have these three main customers, and all three of them want that. That's probably some indication that's something you want to focus on, right? What else about the design team? I didn't hear. Oh. Something that looks cool, maybe. What else does the design team care about in terms of the design? Stability. I think you probably want a lot of the same things as the build team. I think you want your design to be easy to build. Because you have some stake in how well the build team can build it, right? So I think a lot of the design and build team requirements start to overlap in that sense. I think clear instructions overlap. It's kind of easy to build, right? So I'm going to look at these, and right away I'm going to ask you guys a few questions. And I think these are kind of questions you want to ask yourself when you get your initial list. This is exactly how it start to generate the house of quality. Just list things out to start. Right? Get your initial list of house of requirements, and I think this, we could probably get a lot more if we wanted to. Right? But you have some instruction here that says, let's look at the build team, for example. Your first requirement from the build team is clear instructions. What the heck does that mean? Easy to follow. Well, so you want to think about what does it mean to have clear instructions? What does it mean to have clear instructions? So easy to follow. I think it's a little bit kind of same circular kind of definition. They're easy to follow, they're probably clear. They're clear, they're easy to follow, maybe. So, detailed in what way?
Step by step in everything.
Sure, so comprehensive. So they might be comprehensive. They show step by step the whole thing. Somebody had a hand up, wanted to add? Yeah.
Not too many words.
So, so you want them to be concise, probably. We want pictures? Yeah, I think we had. Yeah. Where's that at? So let's take that guy, put it here. Because that's going to lead towards clear instructions. What kind of pictures? Yeah, so high quality pictures, something like that. All right, illustrative of pictures of the important, difficult steps. I think there's probably more you can go into. What facilitates clear instructions for your build team? Okay. Yeah, that's probably a good one. What terminology, what jargon you're using, what acronyms you might be using are clearly defined for your reader, your build team? What does it mean for a tower to be easy to build? Maybe having good instructions. Simple design, okay. We'll get back to that one. What does it mean to have a simple design? What's that? A few tools needed if it's easy to build. Low assembly time. Components, so not just is the whole tower simple, the actual individual components are simple. Right. I think you also could think about maybe easy to build. The steps are, you know, simple design leads to kind of an intuitive understanding of what should be happening with the design. Right, it's easy to understand the design itself. Right, you could also look, maybe it's easy to build. It doesn't take much manual effort. You don't have to really force things together and be strong to get it built. Right, that's a way to define easy to build, right? You might talk about easy to build being maybe it doesn't take very many steps. That's some kind of definition of easy to build. I could build a tower in 3 steps. That's maybe easy. Right? Or maybe it could be 100 steps, but each one of them is super, super easy, super, super simple and requires low manual effort and is intuitive. That's probably easy to build too, by that definition. So the kind of point I'm trying to make here is that these first level understandings of your customer requirements, there's often a lot more lurking if you dig a bit deeper. Okay, and even beyond, there's probably a few more steps underneath each some of these as well. Okay, and that's the level of understanding we need to be working to get to for your design. Right. When my customer tells me they want something that's easy to build, what are they really telling me? That's what we're trying to get to. But I don't know. I mean, what's easy to build might mean something completely different for 2 different products. Yeah, maybe not think so hard. Depending on what your product you're talking about, you know, if we're looking beyond a spaghetti tower, I mean, easy to use could be in most house of qualities on the planet. But what easy to use means is different depending on what product you're talking about. Safe to use could be on every house of quality on the planet, right? But what's safe to use for a chainsaw is different than what's safe to use for a spoon. Those things, that being safe to use means different things for those 2 products. Okay. So you need to get to these second level, more detailed definitions for your understanding your customer to have any real meaning at all. That makes some sense? Okay. And then what we do is to take our, you know, kind of iterate on this for a while, think clearly about this, and you take your list of customer requirements that have been refined and think about, well, how can I measure whether my design will be meeting this customer requirement or not? Okay. And you generally want to do that with your kind of compound single customer, right? So you want to take this list, you have three key customers, you want to mash these somehow into a single list of requirements. Right? And that's going to take maybe preferring one customer over another. So you get down to that single customer. Once you have that single representative customer that kind of encapsulates all these requirements in some way, then you go to, well, let's see, let's take the one that kind of we agreed everybody had is in. So all three of our customers we chose were important, had a requirement to support the tennis ball as high as possible. And you can take that customer requirement that we need to support a tennis ball as high as possible. Okay, what could I measure about some proposed design that could tell me whether I'm addressing the need of supporting that tennis ball as high as possible? I could measure stress, maybe stress and strain, let's say. I think there's even one more direct than that. I could measure how high is the tennis ball off the table. All right? Something I can measure about the design and see whether it's meeting that requirement or not. What else could I measure to see whether I'm meeting the customer need of supporting a tennis ball as high as possible? We got the main one, I think, or the main couple. How long can it actually stand before it starts falling over? Right, it's some measure, like it has to be there high enough for me to measure it. If it's not, doesn't stand up long enough for the measure, then it doesn't satisfy this customer requirement. Right. So you need to think, and again, each one of these customer requirements can lead to a long list of these things. Right. You keep going like that through your aggregate list of customer requirements. What can I measure to see whether I'm meeting this or not? What can I measure to know whether I meet all my requirements for good instructions? Okay, so I said clear instructions have a few number of steps. Well, I can measure the number of steps in the instructions. Right? That's a measure of whether I'm meeting that customer requirement or not. It's a measure of the design. So you can go down your list, and some of them will be kind of one-to-one mappings. And that's fine. Because you can measure those things about a design to see whether you're meeting the customer needs or not. Okay. Okay, so let's bounce back over. Yes, I will save that. Let's fix this first. Okay. So, we kind of did that. I'll actually post what we just did along with the notes from today so you can and extend it out on your own. Let's talk about the next piece of this house of quality. Is that roof part. It's called the correlation matrix. Okay. So we have a house of quality that might look something like this, where we have now, we've done a good job and have n number of different engineering characteristics, where n is some large number. Right, things we're measuring about our design, things we're doing as an engineer to try to address the customer requirements. What we can do for each one of those engineering characteristics, say, well, what's the goal? What's the general direction we would want to improve that if we could? Okay. So I want to maximize this characteristic, this measurement. I want to minimize that measurement if at all possible. Just a direction, not numbers. Okay. Up or down? Which way do you want it to go? So minimize, maximize, or maybe some of them have targets that you have to hit. Okay. So maybe you want the number of instructions you want to minimize. height above table you want to maximize. Okay. And what we're doing here is taking those and mapping. If I make some improvement in this characteristic toward its target, how does that affect my ability to move towards the target on the rest of these? Okay. So for our example we're talking about so far, if my first engineering characteristic, height above table of tennis ball, right? Maybe we can think about this and, well, the higher this thing goes, probably the more number of steps I'm going to need to describe how to build it. Right? Everybody maybe agree with that? Sound reasonable? Well, then, if I'm moving my tower taller and taller, I'm getting farther away from having few number of steps. Right? Improving this guy towards its target moves this one away from its target. So there's a negative correlation. Right? Doing better here makes it harder to do well here. Everybody following that? Yes? Okay. And you march through the table the same way. Right, you look at each characteristic, comparing it. So we can look at characteristic 1 compared to 3. And maybe making the tennis ball much, much higher has some positive correlation on something else. Efficient use of materials or something, I don't know. Or use all spaghetti. This may be a customer requirement, I don't know. And you just march through the table. And fill out all those relationships. And you go, so you can have blanks. On occasion here, if you notice the middle part of the problem understanding form, there are blanks there too, individual blanks. So some things may not be related at all. That's okay. So just looking at this, right, this kind of abstract correlation matrix for the house of quality, what does this tell us about our engineering characteristics? What kind of information does this give us? Yeah, how improving some part of your design affects everything else. Right? So if there's some engineering characteristic that has strong effects everywhere else, strong positive effects, maybe you want to concentrate on making that better, because it's going to make a lot of other things better as well. Or if there's some engineering characteristic that has strong negative correlations to a bunch of other stuff, I better be careful if I try to make that characteristic any better, because it means I have to make a lot of other things worse. So this tells us the relationship between engineering characteristics. And tells us where we can kind of tweak the knobs on our design in order to try to find something that's optimal. And how tweaking one knob affects the settings elsewhere. Effectively. Okay. House of quality, tips and hints. We kind of went through these, but let's summarize. You need to first explicitly identify who your customers are. Right, we did that for our spaghetti tower. There's also an example on the website that's been up for a while for sandwiches, I think, or it's desserts, I think. Right. So it's a house of quality example for a dessert. Right. So you identify your customers and probably identify your most important customers out of that full set. Right. And then just list everything you think they care about with regards to your product before you touch an Excel document to make the actual house of quality. Just list it out first, okay? And then you need to take every one of those customer requirements you first identify and ask yourself, what does that really mean in the context of this design problem we're trying to solve, right? So we talked about easy to use. That means something depending on what you're actually designing. Or safe to use means something different depending on what you're actually designing. So you need to ask yourself, what does it really mean? And what you're really doing there is asking yourself, what does my customer really want when they're telling me they want it to be easy to use? Or they're telling me they want it to be safe? So we're really just trying to drill down into what does my customer really, really want with this? Right? Do they want a faster horse? Or do they want to get from point A to point B faster? Could be either one, but you need to identify which of those actually matters to your customer. So pretty much, it's another one. You could probably put reliable on every house of quality on the planet. But what it means to be reliable changes based on what the product is. Right? Is it working 99.9% of the time in perfect conditions? Can it survive being misused and still actually operate the way it's supposed to? I don't know, right? So that's where you need to ask yourself that question. You're going to come have a house of quality that says reliable. What does my customer need mean when they say reliable for this kind of product? Okay. Talked about easy to use, right? And then the kind of final point is to revisit all of this regularly. You're working on a product for some weeks or months, your understanding of the customer should improve over time. So you need to revisit your house of quality and reassess. Did we catch everything the first time through when we thought about what our customer wanted and meant by reliable? Okay. And I'm going to actually say that this is a good way to start your team meetings when you're in the design process. Open up the house of quality, spend the first 3 minutes reviewing it. First 5 minutes of your meeting, reviewing your house of quality. Is all of this still true? Do we need to expand more? This is what problem we're trying to solve. Right, it's a way of actually focusing the meeting and get going, get rolling too. Okay. Questions about the house of quality? Yes?
So this Kobe shipyard invented the house of quality?
They were using largely this method. I don't know that they had, it's been a while since I read the full paper. I don't know that they had it mapped out exactly in this graphical format, but effectively they were really concentrating and trying to drill down onto what does my customer really want? And then what are we doing to address that? That kind of relationship between those two things. Other questions? Okay. Next thing we're going to talk about today, our second tool in this design process, is the specification sheet, which summarizes design specifications. So in the house of quality, we identified all of these different things we can measure about a design to understand whether it's meeting customer requirements or not. Well, that gives us some good things we can put targets for now. Right? If I can measure the number of steps to understand whether instructions are easy to follow or not, I probably can have a target. I want there to be less than or equal to 25 steps on that measurement. Okay, so basically, it's a translation of your customer requirements and more specifically your engineering characteristics as an extension into actually engineering specs, targets for each one of those measurements. So in our final project example, right, you could measure the width and the length and the height and to see if you're meeting that volumetric requirement or not. Well, then you can put targets on each one of those measurements for your design too, and have an engineering specification. Okay. Important thing here, they are numerical targets. Right? They're measurements. Right? It's not less than width requirement, it's less than 12 inches. Okay. And these can be derived from certainly your customer requirements and spec sheet. Some engineering analysis, particularly as you get later in your career, will go into translating between customer requirements, engineering characteristics, and the actual numerical spec that fulfills that. It might also come, as we address, the government cares about stuff. It has lots of rules on how we have to design things. So your specs can come from standards as well. There's some OSHA standard that the, I don't know what, whatever OSHA standard. My worker has to be safe. Whatever the safety means in this case, right? There's some FDA standard. My coffee has to have less than whatever parts per million poison. Right? That's a spec on my coffee design, my coffee maker design, or whatever. Okay? You generally want to divide your specifications into kind of categories. And here's some example categories. This comes in and becomes particularly useful as your project grows. Because you can have kind of sub-teams within your larger design team that focus on an area. Your company probably has some kind of safety engineering branch or some kind of assembly and manufacturing branch that can inform you early in the design process what you need to consider. All these go into the spec sheet. which looks something like this, but will be much, much longer. Multiple pages of this, effectively. Okay. Let's walk through the different sections of this guy. In that middle part, as the column says, are the requirements. You want to sort them by category. And again, make sure every requirement you have here has a numerical target associated with it. Less than 12 inches. Greater than 6 hours battery life. Numerical targets. Okay. Next kind of column over to the left, the D/W column, is demand or wish or demand or want. Many of these requirements will have some kind of demand. If we don't satisfy this requirement, this specification, our product is illegal because it violates FDA rule, whatever, whatever. Or OSHA rule, whatever, whatever. Right? So that's a demand. Our FDA requires, you know, less than 10 parts per million poison in our coffee. It's a spec for our coffee maker. Right? So that's a demand. That'd be a D here. Okay? But your engineering analysis shows, well, we really want less than 1 part per million poison in our produced coffee. So that's also a requirement, but would be a want or wish. Okay. So it's a demand. It has to be satisfied or the product is not viable. It's a wish or want. It'll make the product better. Right. We want to do this one if we can, if it's feasible to do so. So in terms of the final project we talked about, the requirements, right? The actual hard requirement, or your device is illegal, is 12 by 24 by 18 tall. Right? Those three requirements are all demands. Right? But you probably will, and we will strongly recommend that you do, have requirements that you're smaller than that. Length is actually less than 22 inches, not 24, as a want. We want our design to only be 22, if possible. We have a demand that it's 12 inches wide. We have a want that it's less than 10 inches wide. Right. So you have multiple requirements. One's a demand. If we violate that, the device is illegal or this just product doesn't work. Right. We have a want. That's what we want to achieve for this particular product. You guys understand that distinction? Okay. So there's a huge number of specs where you'll have multiple definitions. Demand, want, demand, want, demand, want. All right. This becomes more important, again, as your projects get more complex. What's the source of that requirement? So you're working on a project for a long time, 6 months, and you look up your spec sheet and you have some requirement and that doesn't make any sense. What's going on there? Where'd that come from? Well, that's actually OSHA standard 15.7.3 from 1994. Or whatever. And you can look up and figure out why that requirement is that. Okay. So what's the actual source of that requirement? Right. Can be engineering analysis, customer requirement, engineering characteristic. Can be standards that you have. Can be contest rules in the context of this class. Dictate that it has to be less than 12 inches. What's the source of that specification? Okay. Again, it's another one that becomes more important as your teams get bigger. What person or team is responsible for making sure our product meets that specification? All right. Who can I go find at the project if we're working on this and the prototypes are not meeting this spec? Go yell at Joe or whatever. All right. And then, like the House of Quality, this thing should be updated over time as you understand things more importantly. A lot of these specs will start out as bounds and estimates on what the upper bound and lower bound of something might be, and get refined over time to what the actual spec is. Right? So you should keep track on when it was last changed, over here in the leftmost column. Okay? So the spec sheet, tips, hints. I would list your customer requirements and engineering characteristics. Just list them out. Okay? Take each point of that list and expand further, possibly. What does it really mean? What does the customer really want? And then you're going to take those specs, those engineering characteristics, and put numerical targets on them. Right? My customer says they want an uptime, long uptime. Well, that means we have a spec of uptime of 99.99%. Right? We have maintenance period of greater than or equal to 1 year. Think about low number of steps. Number of steps less than 25. Easily understandable process. We have to think about that one some more. Okay. Less than 10 newtons torque required to assemble. Whatever. Low physical effort. What are the numerical targets for each one of those requirements? Right? Customer wants a fast car. Or do they care about top speed, acceleration, 0-60 time? We figure that out in the customer requirements. And then top speed, greater than 180, acceleration, whatever G's. Right? 0-60 time, less than 3 seconds. What do those numbers happen to be? Right? So we set numerical targets for each one of these engineering characteristics we've defined. Okay. We have a test for hours at percent load. Well, what? How many hours do we want? How many hours do we want of our battery last at nominal load for our cell phone? We need to put numerical targets on each one of these things, each one of these engineering characteristics we've been able to define. So the engineering characteristics tell us what to measure. The specs tell us what that measure should be for an optimal design, for the design to work well. Okay? And again, revisit this thing regularly. So let's return in the last few minutes today. I'm going to take what we developed, what we thought about a few minutes ago in our engineering characteristics for the spaghetti tower, and think about those from a specifications development perspective. And develop specs in the next, 10 minutes or so, and then we'll come back together and list those out. Okay. So what I've done is to take some example engineering characteristics for a spaghetti tower that I think address some of the things, and I've just copied them right now. Right. So I have the same list. So what we can do, what we should do, once we have these things, we can measure about our design. Right? That should be just number of build steps. Right? So the top list, those engineering characteristics, are things someone set a spaghetti tower design on the table in front of you. What could you measure about it to see whether you're meeting customer requirements or not? Right? So that's our top list. Now that we've identified what can we measure, we can start setting targets for what do we want those measurements to be. Okay? So what you can do is just copy your list of engineering characteristics and start thinking about, using some engineering knowledge about, what are targets for those things. Right? So we might have, the original customer requirement was low number of build steps. Well, the engineering characteristic resulting from that is measuring the number of build steps. Engineering characteristic, the specification that results is we want less than 15 steps. Okay, so we've defined a spec, and you don't want to arbitrarily choose it like we're doing right now, but there's some engineering analysis that goes into what those numbers should be. We want the height of the tennis ball above the table to be greater than or equal to 30 inches for the spaghetti tower. And we might put, well, that's going to be a demand. And we might say, I wish that's 45. So what we're saying is that if this tower we're designing doesn't meet 30 centimeters of height, it's a failure as a design. Right? So that's the minimum we have to meet. Right? But we want to get to 45. That's the W. Okay. Time to topple. Well, it has to stand long enough for one of us to measure it, right? How long is that? 7 seconds. It's precise. I like it. It has to stand for greater than 7 seconds in order for one of us to measure the height. Okay. You certainly have the amount of spaghetti used in your design. In a design, you can measure that. It better be less than 4 ounces, because that's all you got to begin with. Right? So is that a demand or wish? That's a demand. If you have some design that uses more than 4 ounces of spaghetti, it's not a valid design. Right? I'm trying to build this thing as tall as possible, I might want to say, hey, we better be using more than 3.5 ounces in order to get as high as possible. Or something like that. Or maybe we want to use, depending on what our objective is, we might want to be less than 3.5 ounces. If we determine our objective out of our design is to be really resource efficient. That's up to you. That's the point. You have to pick that. You have to think about what direction is your design going, what does my customer care about, and then pick what are these specs. Or maybe you have both. That's a wish. Less than 3.5, greater than 3. So now you have a demand that sets out you can't use more than 4, or it's not a valid design. Right? And what you're saying now is that anything we come up with, we better use more than 75% of that. Right? But we want to be used less than 3.5 ounces. And both of those are wants or wishes. Okay. So you've set out kind of bounds on your design. Here's the hard stop. If we don't do this, it's not valid, it's illegal. But we want our design to be in this range. And that range should be defined, again, not just pulling numbers out like we're doing right now, but based on some engineering analysis. And you guys have enough skill, even at this point in your careers, to be able to come up with numbers like this. Right. Back of the envelope physics will get you a long ways in getting these initial bounds on things. Okay. We can do the same thing with the length of the tape views, right? So those rolls were 9.6 yards, I think. Is that right? Anybody remember? One roll. Use whatever units you'd like. Less than one roll of tape. Right? And we can do the same thing. Maybe we want to make sure we use a lot of the tape as possible in order to have a stable design. Or we want to be resource sensitive and efficient and use very little tape if possible. So you come up with bounds on these things that define the boundaries of your design space and give you an idea of where you need to design, your design needs to converge to. That makes some sense? But the key point is that every one of these things better have a number associated with it. Right? We could have, we have a build time customer requirement, right? Customer requirement says it has to be less than 45 minutes build and measure, right? Well, we can measure the average build time, right? That's something we can measure about a design. We can get some measure of how the average group would take to build that. We also could take what's the maximum amount of time it will take to build this, given our studies or analysis of this design. Right? And we could put numbers on both of those. And we do design demands and wishes and demands and wants for both of those. Right? So our max build time, we can also look, well, it takes 7 seconds to measure. So the maximum build time better be less than 39 minutes and 53 seconds. Or 44 minutes and 53 seconds, sorry. In order to meet the 45-minute total time spec. Right? So you take each one of these things, you can measure about your design to see if you're meeting customer requirements or not, and put a target on it, or multiple targets on it. Okay? And then you take this list you have now and sort it into that table. Once you have that initial table, you can start working from that table directly. Make a little sense? Okay. Again, there's these numbers we're kind of just pulling out a little bit right now, but they need to be based in engineering analysis. Again, you guys have the skills, back of the envelope physics. You guys have been through statics. You have a lot of the skills necessary already to get to real numbers for what you're doing in this class. Okay. Questions about any of that? Okay, see you guys Thursday.